When Bonnie Schmidt joined the U.S. Army, the rules said no more than 2% of the force could be female. From SDPB, today is Friday, June 13th. This is In the Moment. This week, we are bringing you stories of service from South Dakota women veterans. Today, we meet a woman who joined the U.S. Army to leave the drudgery of her rural Arkansas upbringing behind. She found adventure in places like the American Southwest and Panama. She met her husband. She worked as a nurse in an operating room. She overcame obstacles and opposition, sometimes from her fellow soldiers. And she went on to help other veterans understand their place in American history and in their own communities. Bonnie Schmidt shares her memories. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment, and news is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. This week marks the commemoration of the Women's Armed Services Integration Act. Signed by President Truman in 1948, the legislation allowed women to serve in the U.S. Armed Forces permanently and during peacetime. The act allowed more American women to build careers in military service. Three-quarters of women veterans have served during wartime. Now today, according to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, more than 2 million women veterans live in the U.S. In the year 2000, women made up just 4% of the veteran population. The percent of women in military service today is nearly 18%. When Bonnie Schmidt joined the U.S. Army in 1970, there was a cap on the number of women who could serve. No more than 2% of the military could be female. SDPB's Tim Davison and I sat down with Bonnie Schmidt in the Military Heritage Alliance building in Sioux Falls to learn her story of service. And a note to listeners before we get started, this segment of the conversation contains details of assault.
I grew up in Iowa, let's say that. I was born in Sibley, lived around Lamar's, lived around Sioux City, lived around Council Bluffs, graduated from Red Oak High School in Red Oak, Iowa. 2 weeks after I graduated from high school, we moved out into the boondocks of Arkansas, and I hated it so much that I joined the Army to get out of there. There just weren't jobs back in the early 70s, so I just felt, you know, for an opportunity to get some education, some training, some experience in life, so that's what I did, and didn't look back.
Do you remember the recruiting office? Do you remember the recruiter?
I don't remember her name. I remember going to the post office in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. First door I walked into was the Marine Corps office, because it was right there. I want to join the military. How tall are you? I was 5'3". What do you weigh? 89 pounds. You're too skinny. We can't take you until you weigh at least 100. Oh, okay. Went down the hall to the Army, told them, and they said, oh, we'll fatten you up, no problem. So I joined the Army.
What did you want to do in the Army?
Don't know that I had any great expectations back then. I just wanted to learn a skill. And back then, secretarial was a big thing in the military. So I went to the admin personnel clerical program that they had and went through that program.
And your recruiter was female?
Yes, she was, yes.
What did she say to you about being a woman in the Army, if anything?
She really didn't. You know, it was so quick, kind of like you. I walked in that day, talked to them. The next day I was in Little Rock taking my physical, getting sworn in, and the next day I was on a plane to Alabama.
Wow. Yes. What'd your family say?
They were surprised. Well, a little fast there, wasn't it? Yeah, but you know.
Anybody in your family in the military? Any veterans?
My dad. I have some uncles, yeah. So, and then I've got nephews that have, and cousins that have been in, but yeah. At that time, no. And none of my siblings, as much as I wrote home to them, because we were poor. We were very poor. I said, get a high school education. Join the military. Get your GED if you want to drop out. Go in the military. They will get you an education and training. Every one of them now. Gee, I wish I had listened to you 50 years ago.
So what year was this when you joined?
I went in 71.
Okay. And you go to where for training?
Basic I went training. To Fort McClellan, and that was where my basic was and my advanced training also.
Advanced training in?
Personnel.
Personnel. Mm-hmm. What was that training like? What do you remember? Is it co-ed? Is it?
No, everything was women only, yes. Yeah. Just a lot of classroom. Same way with our basic. We weren't out in the field, but maybe 3 days for that. And it was very simplistic. It wasn't anything training wise, but yeah, it was very just classroom oriented and learned a lot about typing and the different forms and how to do a morning report, how to type up orders on the old way to make multiple copies. It was a blue form that you had the paper in that for making multiple copies. And then you took that out. That was the original that they kept in the files. You took that big blue form, and right now I'm smelling it, loaded it onto the mimeograph drum and twirled that thing as many times as you needed copies. And that blue ink, I can smell it to this day.
What uniforms?
When we were in basic and in our advanced training, we wore the old blue PT uniforms that you starched so that that bell skirt stood up by itself. And then you had a blue shirt. They were kind of a denim color, and then blue PT shorts that went under it. We also had our dress uniform. Probably 73, 74, they introduced the new lime green, mint green uniforms.
Yeah. So blue PT skirt.
Yes.
With shorts underneath it.
Right.
Did you exercise? Did you march?
We marched everywhere.
We
didn't
skirts.
Ride. Yeah, we did not ride buses. We marched everywhere. And then when we had PT, then you just unbuttoned the skirt, took it off, sat it off to the side, and you did your PT. Then when you're done, you stepped into your skirt and buttoned it back up again.
What's on your feet?
We had tennis shoes for that. If we were going to class, then we had the old black Oxfords.
Yeah. I love. I still have my Oxfords.
Oh, mine finally wore out about 15 years ago.
I love those Oxfords.
I love them.
So
when you break those in, they are comfortable.
Yeah,
yes.
They're perfect. Mm-hmm. The perfect shoe.
Yes, they were.
I love that. Nylons, hose.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, and basic training. You went to a class on hygiene, makeup, hair, how to dress, how to act like a lady. We were not soldiers. We were ladies.
Yeah. I had that class too in 1988, makeup class.
Oh, clear back.
In the Marines, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Makeup and hair class.
Yeah.
And how to be a lady.
Yeah.
That hung around in the Marine Corps for a long time. It's hot, and you're in Alabama?
It was September when I went in, so it was warm then, but by the time we got done with basic, it was cooling down, and we only had a light raincoat that we had to wear. And then when I went to advanced training in it was late November, December, January is when we had that. And it was cool, but it wasn't really cold, cold.
Yeah. And how much time did you spend taking care of those uniforms? The starch?
Oh,
the
man. We would get out of class, and first thing we would do is if they weren't soiled or anything, you'd run in and you'd start starching and ironing. Otherwise, if you were washing them, we had a group that would wash them, and another one that would starch them, and another one that would iron them. Just like with our shoes. One person was really good at shining shoes. They, you know, there was more than one, but they got to shine all the shoes. Others were good at polishing the brass. They did the brass. I mean, we just broke it all out so everybody, you know, did a little bit of all of it. So yeah. It wasn't just one person doing everything for themselves.
Yeah. How about your hair?
My hair was waist length. Very easy care. I pull it back in a braid, fold it up on the back, put about 4 bobby pins in it, and that was the way I went for 7 years of active duty at least. And then when I went back in, I had it long again. And then I used 2 big brown barrettes across it because you couldn't use anything shiny because it'd show from your hair. So I had 2 big brown barrettes that I put across to hold my braid up. Yeah.
Interracial platoon?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Was this the, did you make friends then with people from all over the country and all backgrounds?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. The gal in the bunk next to me was Hispanic. She was from Texas. Just found her. I'm going to get emotional. Just found her a few years ago when we met up.
Really? What's her name?
Terry.
Terry.
Yeah.
That's amazing. The stories that you must have told.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How our lives changed because when we both got done with our advanced training, because we went through that together, she went to Fort Sam in Texas and I went to White Sands in New Mexico. And, you know, back then you wrote letters and stuff, but eventually you just kind of lose contact over the years. And so it took a while to find her. Yeah.
How did you get to White Sands?
We flew. There was a group of six of us that were on orders at the same time, and we flew out there, got off the airplane, and I cannot listen to America's Horse with No Name without thinking about the drive from El Paso out to White Sands, 50 miles out into the desert. I went through the desert on a horse with no name. Nat was playing on the radio when we were going out there. I thought, oh, how appropriate.
Oh, what were you thinking about where you were going?
Oh, I thought, we're going to be out in the middle of nowhere. And we really were. It was. But it was a beautiful little installation, small post, yeah.
What was it called? What was
White Sands Missile Range.
White Sands Missile Range.
And I have a picture I'll share with you of the flying saucer in the missile park. People say that the U.S. did not have flying saucers, but I have a picture of it.
We are getting to it now. You were there, eyewitness.
Yeah.
So your job then is in the administration office? What were you?
I worked in the recruiter's office is where I was assigned initially. And it was a one-man shop, one clerk shop. Great job, loved it, enjoyed it, but there was a soldier that wanted to date me that would harass me, and he just would show up there whenever the recruiter was out, and he would harass me and try and intimidate me and stuff, and I didn't want to date him. And one evening, another WAC and I, because whenever you walked on base, you had to be in twos, you couldn't be alone as a WAC. We were walking back to the barracks, it was evening-ish. And he jumped out from behind a car and grabbed me, threw me up against the vehicle, shoved her. She ran to the MP station, which was right next to our barracks. By the time they came over, he had hit me a couple times and pushed me down. Okay. So I try not to think about it. It wasn't serious. I mean, it wasn't any worse than a fight that I had with my brothers. I mean, really, when I think about it, you know, it really wasn't any more serious than that, but it was a trauma.
Yeah.
MPs arrested him. He got court-martialed. This is not funny, but he was found guilty, and the court-martial judge says, you like to fight, that's fine. You're getting a ticket to Vietnam. So they sent him to Vietnam. but yeah, that was my one, you know, issue, a bad issue in the military, really.
Yeah. How old would you have been then?
I was 18. I'm still 18.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So.
Had they prepared you for serving with men in basic training at all? Had they given you any kind of preparation, self-defense? Reporting, anything like that prepared you?
No, we really weren't around men. We were pretty much, our barracks were all in one area, and then our school was right across the road. Once we were 4 weeks into basic, we were allowed to go to the enlisted club where there were men there, you know, and we had to be in our uniforms. They could be in their civilian clothes, but we had to be in our uniform. But there was never any altercations like that of any kind, you know. It was always a very, you know, and they were glad to see women, I'm sure, you know, have some female companions too. But yeah, it was just a very relaxed atmosphere there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But otherwise, actually being with men, it wasn't until really, I suppose the ones that went to other schools where they were co-ed had a little more interaction. But until we got to our permanent station, you know, that was when we finally started.
That's quite a beginning. That's quite an introduction.
Right.
And you survived.
Right.
Good for you.
Yeah. Well, and my first day at White Sands, the group of us that had flown out together are sitting in the mess hall. Well, word gets around, you know, small institution. There's new women on base, you know, so we're eating, and all the guys on post, for some reason that day, wanted to eat in the mess hall. So we're eating, and this gentleman comes over, and he stoops down and starts visiting with us and talking with us and introduces himself to us, you know, and we talk and go about our business. Well, a couple weeks later, we run into each other again. Well, he eventually became my husband, so we met in the mess hall.
Memories from South Dakota veteran Bonnie Schmidt. We'll have more of her story after a short break. Schmidt expands her mission, guards military assets with an unloaded weapon, and finds herself pregnant in Panama. You're on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. This week we are hearing some stories of service from South Dakota women veterans. Let's get back now to our conversation with Bonnie Schmidt, a veteran of the U.S. Army. What's the work like in White Sands? You're typing up orders, you're typing up what? What's your mission?
I was doing their reenlistment packets, all the information that went into that, and for them to reenlist. It was just basic clerical work, filing, you know, typing. Yeah. I would go over to the command center to take things over there to drop off, because we had to go over there to have things mailed out and sent through personnel. You know, they'd send them on down through personnel and stuff. So, but yeah. After the assault, though, my supervisor deemed that it wasn't safe there. So he had me transferred to another area. Well, I wound up at the WAC company. The supply sergeant needed somebody, some assistance there. So I worked in the supply office as a supply clerk. And then I would fill in for the company clerk when she was on leave or things got hectic in there. So that was where I spent the rest of my time working at White Sands.
Okay. And WAC is Women's Army?
Women's Army Corps.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just want to make sure I knew that for sure. So then you're with other women. Do you have friendships? Do you have mentors? Tell me about some of the other women you served
with. There was probably five or six of us that were really good friends that palled around. And, you know, we just hung out. We'd go swimming, go to the lake. It was kind of nice where we were because Elephant Butte was a big lake that had dammed up the river and had a huge lake there. You could go swimming there in the morning, turn around and drive 75 miles back across the desert up to the mountain and go skiing up in Cloudcroft. Yeah. So it was really kind of a great, you know, variation of climates in just a very small area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, people are coming and going to and from Vietnam.
Right.
Did that intersect in your life at all in the Army, the war?
Not a lot, other than my husband had just returned from Vietnam. I didn't know that at the time, but he had been back about 2 weeks. A lot of the men that were there were just back from Vietnam. Yeah. A lot of them, they didn't have jobs for them because there were so many of them coming back that they just didn't have enough jobs to keep everybody busy. My husband and about 15 others took a life-saving course just to have something to do. others, they taught them how to ride in the vehicles to go out into the desert when they would go out and pick up missiles that they had launched. You know, they learned how to just go out and retrieve missiles and stuff, so.
Yeah, so when did you get married? In White Sands?
Right.
Okay, so you met your husband there. Tell me that story.
We met February 7th, and we were married May 4th.
1971. Okay.
Very short romance there. And in fact, you know, we didn't even start dating until, you know, about a month later. So it was really short romance. But yeah, we just decided to get married. Crazy guy. Yeah. Very laid back, easygoing. Yeah.
You married him before he went to Vietnam?
No, after he got back.
After he got back. Yeah, so he had already come back when you married him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And did you talk about that time? Did you talk about it?
Was there? No, he didn't really open up about that, other than the fact that he says, don't ever stand beside me to wake me up. He says, wake me up from the toe. Because he would just startle awake a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Probably 10 years later, he told me about some of his time there. And then it wasn't until, when was I? Back 90s. We were at a function in my reserve unit out of Omaha, and he was sitting with a couple of other Vietnam veterans, and they started talking. So.
And then you heard more of the story.
Yeah.
How long have you been married?
We've been married since 71, so it's 52, almost 53.
Wonderful.
I know, that's what everybody says. Oh, this will never work. Somehow we managed to figure it out. So
tell me, you get out of the Army, and then there's a pause. Tell me a little bit.
Well, before I got out of the Army, I was transferred to Panama.
Oh.
And spent 2.5 years in Panama, which was a very exciting tour. I loved it. It was before it became huge like it is now. Panama City is just a ginormous metropolis now. It was very quiet, small city, probably 50,000 at that time, you know. But yeah, it was beautiful, and at the same time, it wasn't the greatest experience either, because where I served at with the 210th Aviation Battalion was on Albrook Air Force Base. We were down at the far end of it. Across the road from us was what they called Hollywood. It was an old shanty town, really poor Panamanians. And when they talk about burn pits for the Gulf, I lived next to one, or worked next to one, for 2.5 years, because they burned everything there.
Yeah.
So, and we had to just work with that smell, smoke, fog of it. Yeah, the whole 2.5 years. But yeah, so when they talk about toxic exposures, definitely, in Panama.
Yeah. I
mean, along with other things that they utilized down there for the weeds and the bugs and everything else, you know.
Right.
So
but
no, it was 210th Aviation Battalion was a great assignment. I was the company clerk. I was the battalion commander's clerk when his secretary was on leave. I was the postal clerk, full CQ, you know. That was quite an experience.
Yeah. So what's CQ?
Charge of quarters.
Oh, okay.
And guard duty.
Oh.
Oh, yes. That was my one and only time of guard duty. Was quite the fun experience.
You're armed?
Yeah. I say less than Barney Fife. It was a two-hour tour. I was from 2200, 2400, 10 p.m. to midnight was my tour. In my little mint, because now I have the little mint green PT uniform. And they give me my commo radio and my M16. Out the door I go to walk the flight line for 2 hours. Well, Panamanians were known to come up through the sewer system to steal parts off the aircraft. Okay, I'm ready for that. Well, I get out there a ways and I see people out there. So I say, we got, you know, thieves on the flight line. Okay. I holler at them, halt, who goes there? Well, they start scattering, and I manage to get my M16 pointed at two of them, get them up against the Quonset hut out there. It wasn't about 30 seconds, and the CQ's out there with me with a handgun, and the MPs are coming down the airstrip from the airbase. managed to catch two. A couple of them got away. When I say less than Barney Fife, we had a weapon, but we were not allowed to have bullets or live fire on the flight line, because you didn't want you to shoot a helicopter or an airplane. So here I captured them with an empty M16. None of the women were allowed to pull guard duty at night. We could do on weekends during daylight hours. You know, you still had to have guard duty and stuff, but not at night anymore.
You were very convincing.
Yeah, less than Barney Fife. I didn't even get one bullet.
Had you ever fired it before? Did you have any training in the M16?
Yes.
We had trained you by then.
We did not qualify in basic or AI or advanced training at that time. When I got to Panama was when I got to first qualify with the M16, and I had to familiarize with the shotgun, which was, that thing was heavy. Whew, man. So, but yeah. Had my passport, so when we had some downtime, if they were doing flights, helicopter or fixed wing, to Central America or South America, day trip, you know, it was just down and back, I would sometimes hop a flight and go with them. So yeah.
Where'd you go?
Went to Colombia, went to Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, basically to the airport, wait for them to refuel and come back. Get to
That's
do any
an adventure.
Sightseeing. Yeah. Yeah.
That's an adventure.
Cool. I would be able to get that far even.
So. Other women there with you then and that in Panama?
Yes, there was one woman that was worked in flight ops and scheduling flights in and out of the airbase there for them. And then there was one other clerk. She was with one of the companies out in the along the flight line. They had other companies billeted out there, and that's where she was. And then one gal that came in that was a mechanic.
Did you feel like you were a trailblazer at that time?
Yeah.
How so?
Serving with so few in a male-dominated field of aviation to begin with, a decorated unit from Vietnam. Oh, I got to live up to this one. So, but yeah, it was. It was just, you know, very different. And the men were very protective of the women in the unit. Yeah. So that was good.
Well, you were treated?
Very respected.
Yeah.
Yes.
Respected. Mm-hmm. And you wanted to live up to that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Maintain that respect and show them that we were worthy of it. Yeah.
Do you feel like you had something to prove?
A little bit, yeah. The one thing that I was horrible at was the run with the men when they would do their PT. Oh, they'd run up the flight line and back. Well, I didn't have great stamina back then. So the grasses would grow up so fast there, and that was why they used a lot of herbicides down there. The grasses would grow up so fast, they'd go up. I'd cut through the grasses and catch them on the way back until I finally got to where I could run that flight line. Oh,
I can relate to that.
Because they wouldn't let me drop out. You can't drop out. You got to keep going. Got to keep going. And they'd always wonder why. She's not back there, but all of a sudden she's back there. So, but yeah, it was. It took about probably about 3 or 4 months for me to build my stamina up to.
Yeah.
To be able to get there.
So what happens after Panama? Where do you go next?
Well, our son was born there and had a lot of respiratory problems. So we were medically...
You're pregnant in Panama?
Yeah, yeah.
With all that exposure?
Yeah, yeah. So.
Were you concerned?
I didn't know at that time. We didn't know. Nope. Didn't know any better. So, you know, yeah.
So just, go on. Your son was born.
Yeah, he was born. Had some health issues, respiratory issues. So... They medically returned us to the States, and I spent my last year at Fort Sam in San Antonio. So, in personnel management, I was in the records department handling promotions for mid-level enlisted and junior officers is what I was handling.
Please indulge me because I love this, but go back and tell me about your maternity uniform.
Civilian clothes. They didn't
civilian
have any.
Civilian clothes?
Yes. As soon as I couldn't fit in my uniforms, I wore civilian clothes. Yeah.
So. Isn't that something?
Yep. In my rank and my name tag on my collar on my shirt or on my blouse or whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then your son is born at Fort Sam, or you're
Panama.
Back in Fort Sam.
In Panama is where he was born.
And then you take him back to Fort Sam. Is your husband with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what happens? Are you going to cycle out then at that point? I'm surprised they didn't let you stay in when you were pregnant back then.
Well, you could then.
You could then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
When I was first married, if I'd have been pregnant, you had to get out.
Okay.
But they had changed the rules, 72 or 3, where you could have kids and stay in then.
Did you bottle feed or did you nurse?
Bottle fed because he was in the ICU for like 3 months. So, yeah.
Were you worried?
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. They medevaced us to the States. He was about 6 weeks old. put us on a medical flight back to the States. We landed at Keesler Air Force Base, spent 2 days there waiting for the next medevac flight to Walter Reed. But the adults were in the back of the medevac plane on litters and in seats. And then we were up in an enclosed, climate-controlled, heated little area there since he was an infant. So
holding your baby. Were you holding him?
I was holding him, but they had a small bassinet type thing on the seat.
How sick was he?
He had pneumonia. He just really could not clear the pneumonia and could not breathe, and they were really concerned. So when we got to the States, we were at Keesler for like 48 hours. Within the first 24 hours, his pneumonia pretty much was clearing up. We spent 5 days at Walter Reed. They could not find anything wrong with him and ran every test available in 1977. And so they sent us back to Panama. We were back in Panama 24 hours, and he was back in the hospital with pneumonia again. So the physicians down there said it had to be something environmental down there that what he was reacting to. So that's why they sent us to Fort Sam.
Okay. So at that point, you're not thinking like we think today about service connection?
For him?
For him or for you?
I mean,
that feels like a very new conversation to me.
Yeah, I had no idea any of that even existed.
I don't think it did exist. Wasn't.
But when I was getting ready to get out, I was on the E6 list. And for promotion to E6.
Oh, E6. Okay, sure.
And I wanted to go to the LPN program, and I was willing to re-enlist, for 6 years to go to the LPN program. I wanted to make the military a career. I really did. And I had too much rank, and I said, well, I'll drop down 1-2 rank, whatever I need to make it to the program. And they said, no, we won't let you drop that far down. You'll have to either stay where you are or, get out or whatever. So I said, well, I guess I'll get out and go on the GI Bill. So that's what I did. I ETS'd out of the military, and my husband and I and our son moved back to Iowa, and I enrolled in nursing school in Sioux City.
On the GI Bill.
On the GI Bill.
So what rank did you leave enlisted?
I left as an E5 promotable.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so now you're a civilian.
I'm a civilian.
And you're going to nursing school.
Go to my 2 years of nursing school at Western Iowa Tech in Sioux City, graduate, move to Sioux Falls, get a job in Sioux Falls, get on with life. Life is good.
South Dakota veteran Bonnie Schmidt of the U.S. Army and the Army Reserve. We will take a break and come back with more with Bonnie. We'll talk with her about her work with veterans, what it means to be a disabled American vet, and what she hopes the military can do for women in the future. You're in the Moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Today, we are hearing a few of the stories of South Dakota veteran Bonnie Schmidt of the U.S. Army. Let's get back to our conversation.
12 years later, here comes a recruiter, gets a hold of me and says, we're looking for OR nurses in the reserves. Would you be interested in joining? Well, I don't know. Don't I have to have a 4-year degree? Because I only had a 2-year degree. And he says, no, not to join the reserves, you don't. Oh, okay. They're offering an $18,000 sign-on bonus. Pick me. So I said, well, I'll be interested. So I, went back in. I had my contract state, I was getting that. We do not have medical reserves in South Dakota.
Right.
So I had to go to Omaha for my reserve unit, but there were also 15 other nurses and medical personnel within the Sioux Falls area that drove to Omaha once a month also. So we would carpool down there.
Okay. Yeah.
My contract, though, being as I was prior service, I had a little bit of no. So I had them put in my contract that I only had to go to Omaha 6 times a year. And I says, and mine will only be in the summer months. I'm not fighting winter to Omaha and everybody else. How come you only have to go there? I said, it's in my contract. Now, if they want to breach the contract and let me get out, that's fine. But the commander said, oh, no, I don't want to do that.
So how old were you then when you became, so you're, and you're
I
an officer.
In,
tell me you go in.
Went back in 90, so I was probably 36.
So 1990.
Yeah.
You're going back in. This is before Operation Desert Shield and Desert Storm?
Yes, or it's my right very at first the... drill in August of 1990, listening to that on the radio. And I'm driving down with another gal who was a nurse in Vietnam. And it's her first drill weekend. And we're like, what did we get ourselves into?
Yeah, no idea that was coming.
No, none.
Yeah. And are you a lieutenant then, or?
Right.
Okay.
I went in as a first lieutenant because both of us did, because prior service, I was a first lieutenant rather than a second lieutenant. So I had a little bit of rank there.
Okay. Yeah. So not National Guard, U.S. Army Reserve, Medical Corps, Omaha, right when the buildup, which is Operation Desert Shield, starts happening.
Mm-hmm.
Saddam Hussein is rolled into Kuwait and America is trying to figure out their response. Mm-hmm. And you are like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
How many kids do you have at this point?
I only had one.
You had one? Yeah. You're still married. Your son is?
He was 12.
12, 13, 15,
right
something
there.
In that
right in
era,
there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now here you are.
Right, yeah.
And did you get called up?
No, but being an OR nurse, I thought we are high dollar items. We're usually the first to get called up, but we did not. And I don't know what the rationale was, you know. Our unit was supposed to get called up as a whole. If one person got called, the whole unit was supposed to get called up. So in October of that year, we went to Indiantown Gap, Pennsylvania as a group to train up on the DepMeds hospital system, how to set up a mobile hospital, operate in it, function in it, tear it down, load it back up, and get it ready for movement to its next location. So we did a 2-week training there. And then in January of 91, I went for my, no, it was in February, early February. I went for my officer basic because they said I was non-deployable if I hadn't been to officer basic. So they got me in there with about 900 other officers from around the country who had been kind of putting off going to their training like they were supposed to. We had our 2 weeks of officer basic and they had taken our plane tickets away from us when we got there. Told us we would not be going home. You would be going directly to a training site to, you know, join another group to get ready to deploy. Okay. Doctors were not happy. They had practices to get back to. They didn't sign on for that. Oh, well, surprise. a lot of the women that were there had brought clothes to go partying. I think I'm about one of three or four that came with a duffel bag full of things to survive for 6 months.
Right.
Because I knew I wasn't going home. I just knew it. But no, we got done the day the ground war ended.
With officer training school.
With officer basic.
Yeah, the day
the
ground war ended.
We got done. And they graduated us and sent us home.
Other deployments during that time? Because you're in for how many years in the reserves?
I was in for 14 years.
14 years, and you retired.
Mm-hmm.
And you were a major by the time that you...
Right.
So you go up the ranks as a nurse. Other deployments?
Annual trainings, you know, at various sites. I went to several military schools. You know, I went to my officer advanced in San Antonio, and then CASCUBE, which is Combined Armed Services Staff School, which is basically a infantry, mechanized, that type of program for Missouri. Well, and I went with the Missouri National Guard is who I wound up with. Another gal and I somehow signed up for it. We did it as a correspondence course here in South Dakota because they didn't have a program here.
Yeah.
And when our commander found out that we had signed up for this course, he says, you know, nurses are not supposed to go to that. No, sir, we didn't know that, but we're halfway through this, we're going to finish it. So we finished the correspondence portion. Then we had 2 weeks of annual training. The first was at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and it was with the Missouri National Guard, their program that they were doing. So we just joined them. There was one other woman and then the two of us nurses. Then we had a 1 month break, I think it was, and then we did another 2 week at Fort Leavenworth, Missouri. So. I was so glad that I had passed my PT test on the first two-week course, because the second two-week course, I left here with pneumonia to go to this. And the program, if you didn't finish it, you had to start it over again. You couldn't just come back and pick up where you left off. Okay. The instructor said, if you come, you show up, and you do your best, you graduate. So I said, okay, if I'm sitting in the corner in a coma, that's my best. I better graduate. So, yeah, it was a tough 2 weeks because we were running usually on 2 hours of sleep a night to get all of your coursework and all of your other activities and stuff done.
Yeah.
And then we never got into my last year and a half of active duty that I did in 93 and 94. I was in the reserves and I got called up.
Okay.
As an OR nurse, got sent to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. Okay, been there, know what that looks like, okay. I was the head nurse of the OR. I had 3 days to get in-processed and take command of the OR. And on the third day, they all mobilized out. So I had a core group of enlisted, two civilian nurses that were there, and I think two anesthetists. There were a few surgeons there also. We weren't doing a lot of surgeries until we could get backfill, but my job was to hire civilian nurses or to get military backfill called in. So I said, contact the 4223rd in Omaha. They've got lots of nurses. So we got a couple from my unit in Omaha, and then from several other units, they called in enlisted officers, nurse anesthetists, they got some surgeons, had that all set up going in 6 weeks. And one of the nurses, thank goodness, who came in had a month's more rank than I did, so she got to be the head nurse. So by then we had too many OR nurses, so the chief nurse of the hospital called me and said, Major Schmidt, we're going to be further deploying you someplace hot and sandy. Okay, I knew what I signed up for. I know where I'm going. She says, you're going to Fort Huachuca. And that was my exact response. I giggled. She goes, obviously, you know where that's at? Yes, ma'am, I know. I've been there. So I had almost 15 months at Fort Huachuca. And I don't think there was a week that went by that we didn't have something in that OR where we were putting out fires and rearranging, doing, changing, fixing. It was quite the experience.
Yeah. And your major, who is adaptable, experienced,
right. Mm-hmm.
Been to Panama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, I was the assistant head nurse in the OR, which was just a small OR, the other nurse and I, and then the clinic nurse was a civilian across the hall, called in and quit one day. The chief nurse comes down, says, we need a head nurse for the clinic. Would you be interested in it? And I said, well, she says, first of all, she goes, have you worked in a clinic before? And I said, well, I work at the VA in Sioux Falls, and I float to the clinic once in a while up there and help out up there. And I said, and I can spell clinic, so I guess. She says, it's yours. So I became the head nurse of the specialty clinic, where we had the general surgeon, urologist, GYN, orthopedics, some of those things that we had patients coming in to see the doctors for. So I was in charge of that. So.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yes, when you've never ever been in a head nurse position ever in your life. You know, I worked charge nurse eventually. You know, occasionally when we were on weekends or night duty, I was a charge nurse, but had never been a head nurse to take on all of the responsibility of, you know, being responsible for all those people, all the equipment, you know, everything that goes on with that. It was quite the experience.
Wow.
Trial by fire.
What have you taken with you and brought back to your community as a veteran?
Mm-hmm.
That you think people sometimes overlook? Because we have women veterans all over this state who are in leadership roles and in families and in schools and in business.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that people maybe overlook about what that time gave you? Because we know what you gave it. You have served punishment.
Right. But, you know, and you don't realize what you are gaining from them, the experience, the people you meet, you learn how to function in different environments and how to take a situation that you normally wouldn't be in and adapt yourself and fit in and make it work, you know, and it is, it's quite a learning process.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you proud?
Oh yes. Very proud. Yeah.
Yeah. What are you the most proud of?
Probably the work I do with veterans now. I'm in the DAV, I'm in the Legion, and the PVA. And Paralyzed Veterans is my organization. I had a rollover accident while on active duty in the 90s. Had whiplash, bumps and bruises, nothing severe but whiplash, that turned into a neck issue with neuropathy and weakness and different issues. And I have my head literally screwed on because they had to go in and put a plate and screws in there. I joined the PVA because I have a spinal cord injury is what it's considered. And so working with veterans to get their disabilities and to get into functions, because every organization has activities, fishing, hunting, whatever. And so many veterans that have health issues, mobility issues, whatever, don't realize that there are things that they can do. And so it's great to be able to bring that to the forefront so that they know what is out there.
Yeah. If you were talking to an elementary school classroom and they're studying the American Revolution and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and they're just little kids thinking about what that means, and they look to you and they say, well, what does that even mean? What would you say to them?
Our freedoms are what we really need to strive for. And if that means serving, then that's what I guess so many of us are called to do.
Anything that you think that the military of the future can do on behalf of women in uniform?
Give them a seat at the table. The Navy just appointed their first female admiral to the Joint Chiefs of Staff in 23. We need to get more women in the leadership roles so that they have some input into not just how we fit into the program, but how we fit the program together so that we're all on the same page and everybody's able to, you know, function a bit together.
Yeah. Seat at the table.
I know we've come a long way since the 70s. And I got out in 2003. And in the last 20 years, things have improved enormously since then. So we've got a long way to go, but we have come a long way.
That's Bonnie Schmidt with the U.S. Army and U.S. Army Reserve, sharing just a few stories of her military service. And that's our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.